Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Wednesday, April 17, 2024. The Senate votes along party lines to declare that the impeachment articles against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas are unconstitutional, that the charges, failing to uphold immigration law and breach of the public trust by lying about the border being secure, did not rise to the definition required by the Constitution of a high crime or misdemeanor. The Republican and Democratic leaders of the House Oversight Committee get into a heated argument over the impeachment inquiry against President Joe Biden. Washington, D.C. National Guard whistleblowers testify that they were ready to be deployed during the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, but Pentagon officials held them back. Boeing whistleblowers tell Senate committees about what they say is a troubled safety culture at the airline company. President Joe Biden goes to the United Steelworkers Union headquarters in Pittsburgh and calls for a sharp increase in tariffs on steel from China. And former Senator Bob Graham, Democrat from Florida, has passed away. We'll hear his advice about civic engagement. He was on C-SPAN a few years ago. A story from The Hill. The Senate voted Wednesday to dismiss two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, shutting down the possibility of a lengthy Senate trial, which Republicans had demanded to bring attention to the Biden administration's record on immigration and border security. It marked the first time in 225 years the Senate voted to immediately dismiss impeachment charges approved by the House instead of holding a floor trial or referring the matter to a special committee to review it. The Senate voted to dismiss the charges by sustaining two points of order raised by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, asserting that they did not rise to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor as required by the Constitution. That was reporting by The Hill. Republicans tried to delay Senator Schumer's effort to dismiss the charge by offering various motions, one to send the Senate into closed session to debate the charges, another to adjourn the impeachment proceeding until a couple weeks from now, and another to table Senator Schumer's objection. The Senate voted 51 to 49 three times along party lines to dismiss those motions. The day started with senators taking the oaths of impeachment jurors. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington State, Senate Pro Tem, presiding.
A quorum is present pursuant to Rule 3 of the Rules of Procedure and Practice in the Senate. When sitting on impeachment trials, the hour of 1 o'clock p.m. having arrived and a quorum having been established, the Senate will proceed to consideration of the articles of impeachment against Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security. Majority Leader is recognized.
At this time, pursuant to Rule 3 of the Senate Rules on Impeachment in the United States Constitution, the President Pro Tem Emeritus, the Senator from Iowa, will now administer the oath to the President Pro Tem, Patty Murray.
Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of impeachment of Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God.
I do. At this time, I will administer the oath to all senators in the chamber in conformance with the Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6 of the Constitution and the Senate's impeachment rules. Will all senators now stand and raise their right hands? Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God?
I do.
The clerk will now call the names in groups of four. Senators will present themselves at the desk to sign the oath book.
Ms. Baldwin, Mr. Barrasso, Mr. Bennett, Mrs. Blackburn.
On the Senate floor, and after the oaths were administered and the senators came up and signed that oath book, the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, offered to the Republicans, debate time and an opportunity to vote on various motions in lieu of a full-scale impeachment trial of the Homeland Security Secretary. You'll hear him and Senator Eric Schmidt, Republican from Missouri, objecting. Then Senator Schumer offered a motion that would effectively end the trial and dismiss the charges.
The Sergeant-at-Arms will make the proclamation.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons are commanded to keep silent under pain of imprisonment while the Senate of the United States is convened as a court of impeachment to consider the articles of impeachment against Alejandro N. Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security.
Madam President.
Majority leaders recognize.
In a moment, I will ask unanimous consent to allow for debate time, to allow for Republicans to offer and have votes on trial resolutions, and allow for Republicans to offer and have votes on points of order. So, I ask unanimous consent that Senator Lee be recognized to offer a resolution that is the text of S. Res. 624, the full Senate trial, that Senator Cruz be recognized to offer a resolution that is the text of S. Res. 622, the trial committee, that there then be up to 60 minutes of debate on the resolutions concurrently and equally divided between the two leaders or their designees, and following the use or yielding back of that time, the Senate vote on or in relation to the resolutions in the order listed with no amendments to the resolutions in order. Further, that following the disposition of the trial resolutions, if they are not agreed to, Senator Schumer or his designee be recognized to make a motion to dismiss the first article of impeachment, that the motion be subject to only 7 points of order, that there be up to 60 minutes for debate concurrently and equally divided on the motion to dismiss and the points of order, and that following the use or yielding back of that time, the Senate vote in relation to the points of order in the order raised and the motion to dismiss. Further, that if Senator Schumer or his designee makes a motion to dismiss the second article of impeachment, that the motion be subject to only 1 point of order, that there be up to 60 minutes for debate, concurrently and equally divided, on the motion to dismiss and the points of order, and that following the use or yielding back of that time, the Senate vote in relation to the points of order in the order raised and the motion to dismiss. Following that further disposition of Article 2, the Senate vote on the motion to adjourn the Court of Impeachment sine die. Finally, that there be up to 4 minutes for debate equally divided between the two leaders or their designees prior to each roll call vote, all without intervening action or debate.
Is there an objection?
Madam President.
Senator from Missouri.
Reserving my right to object. To dismiss or table articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas without a trial here today or in committee is an unprecedented move by Senator Schumer. Never before in the history of our republic has the Senate dismissed or tabled articles of impeachment when the impeached individual was alive and had not resigned. As Senator Schumer said in 2020, quote, a fair trial has witnesses. A fair trial has relevant documents as part of the record. A fair trial seeks the truth. Nothing more, nothing less. I will not assist Senator Schumer in setting our Constitution ablaze and bulldozing 200 years of precedent. Therefore, I object.
Madam President.
Objection is heard.
Madam President, I raise a point of order that impeachment Article 1 does not allege conduct that rises to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor as required under Article 2, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, and is therefore unconstitutional.
Under the precedents and practices of the Senate, the chair has no power or authority to pass on such a point of order. The chair, therefore, under the precedents of the Senate, submits the question to the Senate. Is the point of order well taken? The Republican leader is recognized. Clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Baldwin.
Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington State, the Senate President Pro Tem presiding over the impeachment trial of the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. You also heard from the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, and Senator Eric Schmidt, Republican from Missouri. Before the vote on Senator Schumer's motion, there were some Republican motions. One, to go into closed session to debate it. Two, to adjourn until April 30th, and 3 to table or kill it. All failed, 49 to 51 on a party line vote. The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, offered that motion to table.
The Senate just swore an oath to do impartial justice according to the Constitution and the laws of our country. We swore to discharge a duty that is quite different from our normal work. As a court of impeachment, we're called not to speak, not to debate, but to listen, both to the case against the accused and to his defense. At this point, in any trial in the country, the prosecution presents the evidence of the case, counsel for the defense does the same, and the jury remains silent as it listens. This is what our rules require of us as well. But the Senate has not had the opportunity to perform this duty. The Senate will not hear the House managers present the details of their case against Secretary Mayorkas, that he willingly neglected the duties of his office, and that he lied to Congress about the extent of that failure. Likewise, we will not hear the Secretary's representatives present the vigorous defense to which he's entitled. Our colleagues know that we are obligated to take these proceedings seriously. This is what our oath prescribes. It's what the history and precedent require. And I would urge each of our colleagues to consider that this is what the framers actually envisioned. The power of impeachment is one of the most delicate balances our constitutional system strikes with a portion of the American people's sovereign electoral authority. It purchases a safeguard against malpractice, and it gives the Senate the power and the duty to decide. This process must not be abused. It must not be short-circuited. History will not judge this moment well. Therefore, I move to table the point of order and ask for the ayes and nays.
Is there a sufficient second? There is a sufficient second. The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Baldwin.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. His motion failed on a party line vote, 49 to 51. Then the Senate voted to sustain the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's objection that the articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas were unconstitutional because they did not reach the standard of high crime or misdemeanors. Separate votes on the two articles were 51 to 48. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, voting present. There were also some other motions offered by Republicans that were defeated, and then a motion from Senator Schumer to adjourn the impeachment trial. And that passed 51 to 49, ending the proceedings. Earlier in the day, Senator Schumer spoke on the Senate floor.
This afternoon, senators will come to the floor and be sworn in as jurors in the impeachment trial of Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Yesterday, the Senate received the impeachment House managers, who read the two articles against the Secretary. Today, the trial will commence, and we will be in our seats as jurors for the third time in 4 years. But this time, senators will provide as jurors in the least legitimate, least substantive, and most politicized impeachment trial ever in the history of the United States. The charges brought against Secretary Mayorkas fail to meet the high standard of high crimes and misdemeanors. To validate this gross abuse by the House would be a grave mistake and could set a dangerous precedent for the future. For the sake of the Senate's integrity and to protect impeachment for those rare cases we truly need it, senators should dismiss today's charges. So when we convene in trial today, to accommodate the wishes of our Republican Senate colleagues, I will seek an agreement for a period of debate time that would allow Republicans to offer a vote on trial resolutions, allow for Republicans to offer points of order, and then move to dismiss.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer this morning, he did offer that compromise, he said, to the Republicans. They rejected it, and then he offered two motions, one on each article of impeachment, saying that the articles themselves were unconstitutional, and that did pass, effectively ending the trial. After it was all over, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, responded at a news conference.
Well, as you all know, we're deeply disappointed in the Senate's action, they've just taken on the Mayorkas impeachment proceedings. There should have been a full trial. The American people should have been able to see the evidence and evaluate for themselves what I think they know already intuitively, and that is that Secretary Mayorkas had a fantastical breach of duty. I mean, he breached his constitutional responsibility. He's openly defied the federal law on immigration and the will of Congress. In my view, he has lied on multiple occasions to Congress under oath, and I think he's done it to me when I used to serve on the House Judiciary Committee. My evaluation is he's probably the least effective and I think most dangerous in terms of his policy implementations of any cabinet secretary in the history of the United States. And if there's ever been a cabinet secretary that deserved to be impeached, he is that. And the idea that the Senate and under Chuck Schumer's leadership voted on party lines to not even allow the American people to evaluate the evidence is shameful. I think it's a violation of their constitutional responsibility. And I think there'll be a reckoning for all this in the election cycle in the fall. I really do.
House Speaker Mike Johnson at a news conference. This is Washington Today. From rawstory.com, Congressman Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland, and Congressman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, clashed Wednesday in a shouting match over the possible impeachment of President Joe Biden. At a House Oversight Committee hearing on China, Raskin observed that Republicans had accused Biden of taking bribes, the cornerstone of the GOP's impeachment inquiry, which has so far failed to turn up convincing evidence. That was from rawstory.com. Here's part of the exchange.
It's obviously been dropped, and yet this was the genesis of our investigation.
That's just simply not true, but go ahead.
I'll yield to the chairman if you want to take some more time.
No.
Well, you can use
your
time.
Are you saying the bank statements are Russian disinformation, that the Bidens took $9,000 from China?
Oh, I agree you've been talking about bank statements for more than a year, but they don't show anything other than there was no crime.
So it's okay for, as Tony Bobulinski said, for China to bribe Joe Biden's family with $9 million.
But that's the lie that's been discredited. I mean, where is your impeachment investigation? If Joe Biden took a $9 million bribe from China, why aren't you impeaching him for that?
Well, who says we're not?
Well, I can invite Mr. Moskowitz to come back in. Do you want to move for impeachment today? Because I thought that was your main agenda item. You said it was the paramount priority of the committee.
No, this is a hearing on China, and you all have an obsession with Russia and Trump. It's disturbing.
We can talk
you
about China
therapy.
And Trump or Russia
you all
and
need,
Trump.
He's you got need therapy, Mr. Raskin.
No. You need therapy. You're the one who's involved with the deranged politician, not me, okay? I've divorced myself from Donald Trump a long time ago. You're the one who needs to disentangle from that situation. And I will tell you this. If you believe that it would have been illegal for Joe Biden to take $5 million from Ukraine, it certainly would have been. What do you think about Donald Trump taking more than $5 million from the Chinese government while he was president?
Well, we know that Donald Trump had a legitimate business that he talked about and he campaigned
on. The legitimate business was the White House. He sold the White House.
Give me a break. What business were the Bidens in? Well, what business did Joe Biden's family own? What business were they in? Did they have hotels? Did they have a social media company? Did they have golf courses? Did they have casinos? Did they have office
Mr.
buildings?
Mr. Chairman.
What business? Did they have an energy
Mr.
company?
Chairman, we have spent tens of millions of dollars you pursuing
we have,
Joe Biden, and you have not
true.
Identified
that is a
single
lie.
Crime.
You are
really?
Lying. That's
really?
A lie. We have not spent $10 million.
Hey, how much have you spent?
We haven't spent hardly anything.
Oh, it's been for free. Okay. All right. Well, in any event, you know what? Then we get what we paid for it because you got nothing.
Answer
you've
this
not
question.
Named
answer
a single
this
crime.
Question. No, what did the Bidens do? What business were they in? Why did they get millions and millions of dollars?
I would like
can
to ask you.
What no, you start. What okay. did the Bidens do?
I don't know
what
who you're
business
talking
were they
about.
In.
Well, what Biden? What business is the Comers what? In? You're talking about lots of people. There's lots of people in the family.
I'm a farmer.
Your
I have land. I
your
lease land.
Investigation
I sell
must identify a high
Bidens
crime
do?
And misdemeanor.
What did they do?
I'll tell you what Joe Biden did. He was a senator of the United States. Then he wrote a book, and he said he made the most money he ever made in his life, millions of dollars on his book, and he gave $1 million.
That's what his family did. That's why Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Romania, China, Russia, that's why they paid the Biden family money, because of Joe Biden.
None of those governments paid anyone any money.
So, somebody needs therapy here, but it's nobody on our side of the aisle, okay?
Back to the China hearing.
You had your chance. I would like my time restored.
Your time was expired.
You interrupted me. I want my time restored.
You had your time. You went above, and I let Ms. Thornton go a minute.
You know what?
Sit down, everybody. Come back. This is about China. We asked a simple question. No, Ms. Presley, you're out of order. Sit down.
Mr. Chairman.
House Oversight and Accountability Committee hearing today. The chair, James Comer, Republican from Kentucky. The ranking member, Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Maryland. Congressman Comer told Fox Business this morning he expects criminal referrals against members of President Biden's family coming from the committee's impeachment inquiry. House Administration Committee held a hearing today about the military's response to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. The committee previewed by saying the hearing will feature D.C. National Guard whistleblowers who say they were ready to be deployed on January 6 but were held back by DOD officials. Additionally, the whistleblowers will reveal how the January 6 committee did not want to hear their testimony because it corroborated Donald Trump and his allies' claims that the former president did authorize the National Guard days in advance to respond to any violence or unrest on January 6, 2021. That was the description from the committee. One of the witnesses was Michael Brooks, senior enlisted officer at the D.C. National Guard at the time of the January 6 Capitol attack. He criticized a Defense Department Inspector General's report on the military response that day.
I'm not here to disparage the Army that I love and served for nearly three decades, but to correct the record and speak for the hundreds of enlisted soldiers and airmen of the D.C. National Guard who have always answered the call to serve without political bias or prejudice, who have always faithfully fulfilled their oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Those Capitol Guardians who continue to do so even today after being degraded by senior officials of the Army and the Army staff in their inaccurate and biased report. I believe those who steered the narrative of the DODIG report did so not for historical documentation or to enhance future military response capability, but to protect and advance individuals who sought to shield themselves from responsibility, to overly enhance their role and perceived significance in a critical moment in the history of our nation's democracy. In truth, their actions, no matter how innocent they believe them to be, have led to an awful mark on our military, and shown an incredible lack of respect for the service of the men and women who serve in the D.C. National Guard before, during, and after January 6th, 2021. Trust in our Army's most senior leadership was lost. Their actions and comments have highlighted the Army staff and the Secretary of the Army's lack of knowledge and understanding of the D.C. National Guard, its authorities, and capabilities. Prior to the protests following the murder of George Floyd in May of 2020, I do not believe any of them understood just how unique the D.C. National Guard is and the responsibility that is delegated from the President to the Secretary of Defense and further delegated to the Secretary of the Army. I believe it is this lack of understanding that led to the significant delays in the military response on January 6th. I will not sit here today and say if we had been given authority to immediately respond when Chief Sun, the Chief of the Capitol Police, made that first frantic call for support at 1:49 p.m., that we would have prevented the breach of the Capitol. What I can tell you with absolute certainty is that we had a force equipped and ready to respond. And despite the inaccuracies of the DODIG report, we had a plan and would have liked the opportunity to try. Instead, we waited for hours, less than 2 miles east of the Capitol building, absolutely frustrating, knowing our Capitol had been breached and not understanding why we had not received the authorization to respond. I cannot tell you the number of times someone has asked me, where were you? Where was the National Guard? Or how can you call yourselves Capitol Guardians? There is no easy response to those questions, and the truth is, we were there, and we were ready. We just weren't authorized to respond, and that is difficult to explain.
Michael Brooks, senior enlisted officer of the D.C. National Guard, testifying before the House Administration Committee today. A story from Politico begins, Donald Trump could have cleared up confusion and hastened the arrival of the National Guard troops to quell the Capitol riot if he'd called Pentagon leaders on January 6, 2021, according to recent closed-door congressional testimony by two former leaders of the D.C. Guard, Michael Brooks, senior enlisted leader at the time of the riot, and Brigadier General Aaron Dean, the adjutant general of the D.C. Guard at the time, told House Administration Committee staffers that if Trump had reached out that day, which by all accounts he did not, he might have helped cut through the chaos amid a tangle of conflicting advice and miscommunication. That reporting by Politico. From NBC News, facing a divided party and pressure to act, House Speaker Mike Johnson rolled out three bills Wednesday to provide assistance to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, with the hope of holding final votes on Saturday. The bills represent a major test of Johnson's ability to navigate a thicket of political and global challenges with a wafer-thin majority, and it comes as Johnson faces a serious threat to his gavel from Republicans Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie. Johnson's biggest challenge is Ukraine funding, an issue that has bitterly divided the GOP. He has been squeezed by conservative security hawks who want to help Ukraine fend off Russia's aggression, and by an empowered isolationist wing that is feeding off former President Donald Trump's criticism of NATO and prior Ukraine aid measures. That from NBC News. President Biden put out a statement in support of what Speaker Johnson is doing, writing, "The House must pass the package this week and the Senate should follow quickly. I will sign this into law immediately." USAID to Ukraine came up today at a House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Here are the questions from Congressman Hal Rogers, Republican from Kentucky.
Let's talk a moment about the ramifications of what we do in Ukraine. Obviously, our most severe non-combatant is absent from the scene. But the ramifications of what we do there or don't do there is heavy. Ms. Secretary, would you care to tell us what you think is the bigger picture, the strategic and moral importance of the situation in Ukraine as it relates with us?
You know, what we have said from the very beginning, sir, is that we want to see, at the end of the day, a Ukraine that is a democratic, independent, and sovereign state that can has the means to defend its territory and deter aggression. And Ukraine is not asking for us to fight the fight for them. They are asking for us to assist by providing some of the means that they need to protect themselves and defend their territory. And we've done that over the last 2 years, and that's why they are in the place that they are now. I mean, they've defended against a much superior force, and not only held their ground, but also taken back some 50% of what Russia the ground that Russia occupied initially. And I think for a much smaller force, I think that's commendable. But unless they have the air defense interceptors, the artillery munitions, and other things that they need, it's going to be very difficult for them to sustain their efforts. Now, if they are not successful, to your question, it has ramifications not only for Europe, but for the United States of America. Because we all know that Putin won't stop in Ukraine. This will continue. And, you know, our allies on the Eastern Front there are very, very concerned about that, and rightfully so. It will also signal to other autocrats around the globe that, the United States is not a reliable partner. And so all of the alliances and partnerships that we've worked hard to develop over the years will be in question in terms of their eyes. So it has significant ramifications. But again, I think Ukraine has done an incredible job of inflicting significant damage on the Russian military with a much smaller force. And they've done that with our help and the help of some 50 nations that we've rallied in their support.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, questioned by Congressman Hal Rogers, Republican from Kentucky, at today's Appropriations Subcommittee hearing on the president's fiscal year 2025 budget request for the Defense Department. And House Speaker Mike Johnson has rolled out the text of the bills that will be voted on this week to fund Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and another bill that will have various House Republican foreign affairs priorities. Times of Israel has a story. British Foreign Minister David Cameron said Wednesday that it was clear Israel had made a decision to respond to Iran's unprecedented weekend drone and missile attack, and he hoped the retaliation would be carried out in a way that minimized escalation. Cameron spoke to reporters in Israel after meeting President Isaac Herzog. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi there. I'm Jonathan from C-SPAN, along with my colleague, Ben. Since C-SPAN's founding 45 years ago, the media world has changed. Remember when there were just a few TV channels? Now we've got streaming, social media, apps, and more.
Through all of this, C-SPAN has stayed true to its mission of giving you unfiltered access to government wherever you get your news. As we navigate this challenging media environment with fewer people subscribing to traditional cable packages, our funding has been impacted.
That's why we're asking for your help to keep going strong for another 45 years. Please donate today at cspan.org/donate. Your contribution, large or small, helps ensure at least another 45 years of witnessing democracy in action.
Keep C-SPAN thriving in today's ever-changing media landscape. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your gift today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you find your podcasts and on the C-SPAN Now mobile app. It's free. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette writes that President Joe Biden heads to Pittsburgh Wednesday, the middle stop on his three-day pre-primary tour across the nation's most populous swing state. Mr. Biden will speak at the headquarters of the United Steelworkers Union, which endorsed the president last month. The president last month sided with the steelworkers and said it was vital for U.S. Steel to remain domestically owned and operated. That followed the announcement that a Japanese corporation, Nippon Steel Corporation, had agreed to buy the iconic American company. U.S. Steel shareholders approved the deal earlier this month. The administration on Wednesday announced new steps to prevent China from dumping below-cost steel into the United States, including tripling tariffs and seeking an investigation by the U.S. Trade Representative. That was from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Here's part of President Biden's speech at the Steelworkers Union headquarters.
U.S. Steel has been an iconic American company for more than a century, and it should remain a totally American company. American-owned, American-operated by American Union Steelworkers, the best in the world. And that's going to happen, I promise you. Yeah. Second, American steelworkers can outwork, outcompete as long as they have fair competition. But for too long, the Chinese government has poured state money into Chinese steel companies, pushing them to make so much steel as much as possible, subsidized by the Chinese government. Because Chinese steel companies produce a lot more steel than China needs, it ends up dumping extra steel into the global markets at unfairly low prices. And the prices are unfairly low because China's steel companies don't need to worry about making a profit because the Chinese government is subsidizing them so heavily. They're not competing. They're cheating. They're cheating. And we've seen the damage here in America. You know, back in the early 2000s, the Chinese steel began flooding the market in steel towns all across Pennsylvania and Ohio, who were hit very hard. Between those years, 2000 and 2010, more than 14,000 steelworkers in Pennsylvania and Ohio lost their jobs. 14,000. Let me ask you, are we going to let that happen again?
No!
I promise you, and I'm not going to let that happen again. Look, right now, my U.S. Trade Representative is investigating trade practices by the Chinese government regarding steel and aluminum. If that investigation confirms these anti-competitive trade practices, then I'm calling on her to consider tripling the tariff rates for both steel imports and aluminum imports from China.
President Joe Biden at United Steelworkers Union headquarters in Pittsburgh, the middle of a three-day campaign swing in the battleground Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Yesterday was Scranton, and Thursday will be Philadelphia. Wall Street today, the Dow down 45, NASDAQ down 181, S&P down 29. The Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC, posting today that the House will vote on The Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, H.R. 4639, which would close the data broker loophole by prohibiting intelligence and law enforcement agencies from purchasing American sensitive data from shady data brokers. Again, that was the post by that group, Electronic Privacy Information Center. Congresswoman Harriet Hageman, Republican from Wyoming, led the debate on the House floor.
Today, seemingly every American carries a smartphone with them wherever they go. These devices contain vast amounts of information of Americans, such as where they travel, what they purchase, their health information, and so on. As the Supreme Court has noted, these devices, quote, hold for many Americans the privacies of life, end quote. Before the modern internet, the Fourth Amendment required law enforcement to execute a search warrant and subpoena the items they wish to review. The officer executing the search would have to provide a copy of the warrant and an inventory of the property seized. But today, federal agencies often sidestep the requirements of the Fourth Amendment and access and collect massive amounts of private information on Americans by exploiting a legal loophole in the ECPA and Fourth Amendment doctrine. While ECPA prohibits communications companies from providing customer information to the government in the absence of a subpoena, warrant, or other court order, no such prohibition exists for providing this information to third parties, such as data brokers. Instead of going to a judge to demonstrate probable cause and obtain a warrant, government agencies like the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Internal Revenue Service, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Department of Homeland Security can simply turn to data brokers and purchase mass amounts of Americans' data. The government is collecting vast amounts of data by purchasing it from data brokers or other third parties. Media reports have detailed that some data brokers have even tracked people at places of worship and at protests. While the Judiciary Committee has in recent years advanced major reforms to overhaul ECPA, those bills have not yet passed into law. It is long past time that Congress acts to protect the privacy of Americans.
Congresswoman Harriet Hageman, Republican from Wyoming, on the House floor today. Many Democrats also voicing support. The bill came out of committee unanimously. From Associated Press, Boeing was the subject of dual Senate hearings Wednesday as Congress examined allegations of major safety failures at the embattled aircraft manufacturer, which has been pushed into crisis mode since a door plug panel blew off a 737 MAX jetliner during an Alaska Airlines flight in January. The Senate Commerce Committee heard from members of an expert panel that found serious flaws in Boeing's safety culture. A second Senate hearing Wednesday featured a Boeing engineer who testified that the company is taking shortcuts in assembling 787 Dreamliners that leave sections of the aircraft's skin vulnerable to breaking apart. That was from Associated Press. That engineer is Sam Salenpour. He testified before an investigative subcommittee of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee.
I want to make clear that I have raised these issues over 3 years. I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up. At one point, Boeing management got sick of me and raising these issues and moved me out of the 787 program into the 777 program. On the 777 program, I found problems. Again, I found that Boeing started a new process to build the airplane without taking into the consideration of the design of the airplane and how the airplane was designed. As a result, I witnessed severe misalignment when the planes were assembled. Boeing manufacturing used unmeasured and unlimited amount of force to correct the misalignment. And this also weakens the airplane in the long run. I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align. I call it the Tarzan effect, among other improper methods. Again, I raised concerns internally. I was sidelined. I was told to shut up. I received physical threats. My boss said, I would have killed someone who said what you said in a meeting.
Sam Salenpour, Boeing engineer and whistleblower, testifying before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee on Investigations. The Senate Commerce Committee heard from an expert panel looking into Boeing's safety culture. The chair, Maria Cantwell, Democrat from Washington State, questioned the MIT aeronautics lecturer Javier De Luis, whose sister died when a Boeing 737 MAX 8 crashed in Ethiopia in 2019.
Well, I wondered to what degree this committee or
I did as ranking member of the committee then a whistleblower report that detailed in 2021, an FAA engineer, Michael Collins, describes an instance where the FAA management overruled an engineer regarding a lithium-ion battery in the 787. And notably later, the FAA had to ground the 787 in response to fires caused by the very lithium-ion battery. So there was an instance where people were not listening to what people were saying on the line, what needed to be done. There's another incident where Dr. Martin Bickbowler stated that a more secure safety reporting system may have prevented him from facing retaliation for filing complaints about different components not meeting FAA standards. So how do we ensure that those who are speaking up about safety measures get listened to? I'm sure in this case, these two knew who to go to, but just because they've been very experienced people, but that they weren't listened to. So what do we do with this part of the problem? What do we need to do with the FAA?
You know, in a properly functioning SMS, in a properly functioning safety culture, those questions wouldn't be asked, right? Because people would be empowered, people would have confidence that they wouldn't be smacked down if they spoke up. I don't think that's what we're dealing with here, and which is one of the reasons that, by the way, that we, in one of our recommendations, we recommended that Boeing establish what are called ASAP programs, aviation safety action programs. They're very common in airlines, and an ASAP program is a tripartite program. It has the FAA, the labor, and management, and if you initiate an ASAP event, you're protected. But more importantly than being protected, the event gets visibility at the FAA level and at as well as the management level. And for me, when I started on this committee, I quickly became a big convert to visibility, because I'm convinced that if enough eyes had seen the MCAS design 10 years ago, somebody would have raised their hand and said, "Hey, wait a second, maybe having a system that if one sensor failed, it crashes the airplane to the ground is not the best idea." But they didn't, because as was noted, it was purposely hidden, right? So I'm
well,
all about...
Well, just to be clear, there were whistleblowers who did bring this up and said that it was unsafe, but they weren't listened to. They weren't listened to. Right. And so this is why we're saying good engineering, as I think you agree, wins the day, but people have to listen to the engineers. And so... We're trying to discover here what kind of... Look, our committee can only do the oversight of the FAA that enforces the FAA to do its oversight job correctly. Mm-hmm. And we want to know what we need to do to strengthen this. But my time has expired. I have a suspicion I'll be able to come back to this.
Senator Maria Cantwell, Democrat from Washington State, Chair of the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, questioning MIT Aeronautics Lecturer Javier De Luis. Story from BBC News, United Airlines has blamed Boeing for a $200 million hit to its earnings in the first 3 months of the year. The carrier was forced to ground its Boeing 737 MAX 9 fleet for 3 weeks after a mid-air cabin blowout on Alaska Airlines flight in January. United said that pushed it to a pre-tax loss of $164 million for the first quarter. Airlines said it would have reported a quarterly profit otherwise. And from the Tallahassee Democrat, former two-term Florida governor and three-term U.S. Senator Bob Graham died Tuesday. He was 87. Graham, who died of old age with his wife Adele and their family by his side in a retirement community in Gainesville, was celebrated for his common man approach to governing and his regular work days, spending an entire day each month working different ordinary jobs with the press kept away. That was from the Tallahassee Democrat. Bob Graham was on C-SPAN's morning program Washington Journal in 2016 to talk about his book, America, The Owner's Manual. You can fight City Hall and win.
People should register, they should vote, they should be participants in all the ways of democracy. But don't forget that you do not have to wait for an elected official to take action. You have the rights and responsibilities as a citizen of the United States of America to make a difference. I use the example of the women in Sacramento who in a few years were the principal force in cutting in half the number of deaths attributable to drunk driving in the United States. They used government, but they didn't wait for government. They took the initiative. And that's what I am urging, that people who feel passionate about issues, they need to have the skills of how to go about this. This is not something that you pick up in the play yard. You have to know what the skills and how to use them are, and then you have to be persistent. Government doesn't typically act quickly, and you have to be prepared to play the marathon game, not the 100-yard dash, if you're going to be successful.
Bob Graham, former U.S. Senator, Democrat from Florida, 1987 through 2005, on C-SPAN in 2016. On his book, America, the Owner's Manual, You Can Fight City Hall and Win. Bob Graham has died at the age of 87. Another former governor, and Bob Graham was a governor as well, Jeb Bush, a Republican, posting on X, Florida and our country has lost a great public servant. Bob Graham served Floridians with a servant's heart, with integrity and with civility. Columba and I are praying for the Graham family. And another former senator, Bill Nelson, a Democrat who's now NASA administrator, posting, Bob Graham, one of America's finest public servants, Adele's cherished husband and a devoted father and grandfather, has left us for his celestial home. He strongly believed that a public office is a public trust. What a legacy. Godspeed, Bob Graham. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, word for word, and get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.